and welcome to the Tunnel 7 podcast. This show is for clients, potential clients, and really anyone who is interested in making better decisions about their website. My name is Derek Allard, and I am a freelance website designer based in lovely East Hampton, Massachusetts. In each episode, I cover exactly one topic related to website design and explore it to provide insight, direction, and hopefully even some entertainment for my listening audience. I also have the soon-to-be-famous Tunnel 7 Q&A where I answer your questions. If you would like to send a question to be answered on the show, you can do so anytime at tunnel7.com/podcast and complete the Have a Question form. Okay, so we are now on episode 10 of the Tunnel 7 podcast, and today on the show I am going to be talking about website accessibility. It's a topic I think that is gaining more prominence as time goes on, and I thought it'd be a good topic to touch on. I think a lot of people maybe aren't aware of it, or if they are aware of it, have a very nebulous idea of what it is. So we'll be talking about that in detail. Okay, and at this point in the show, a quick recap of what is happening here at Tunnel 7. I am staying busy. I've been doing actually quite a bit of work for other design firms in the area, and a lot of that has been geared around very specialized coding, essentially for CSS and XHTML, firms that are looking to do more standards-based work but don't have the expertise to do it in-house. So I've been taking on some of that work, which has been very good, building a little network of folks. I've enjoyed that very much. And also I have myself three projects up and, well, not up and running. They're in the process of becoming up and running. Two of them, I believe, will be done by next month. They're closer, and one of them will be a little bit after that. Fun. Those are projects I'm taking from start to finish. So everything, these are clients who came to me with nothing, registered domain name, set up hosting. For one of them, we're working with Expression Engine so they can edit content directly. So yeah, those are more full-blown projects from start to finish, and also very enjoyable kind of along the way. Oh, a quick note. I think last month I had mentioned I will be teaching for the Valley CDC here in town again this spring, and I have the dates for those. Those are May 19th. It's from 5:30 to 8:30, and on June 2nd from 5:30 to 8:30. Those are the two classes I'll be teaching. Both are on website marketing topics, and if you are a local person, do sign up, and I'd love to see you in the class. We had a lot of fun back in December with the class that we had. I enjoyed it very much. It's a worthwhile cause as well. The Valley CDC is an entity, a nonprofit to help small businesses in the area, and I'm happy to work with those folks because that's really what I am in many respects. So that is that, and that's really a quick recap, everything going on here, and that's it. So let's move on to the Q&A. All right, the questions and answers. As always, there are three questions that I've received from people out there through the website, or actually some have come via Twitter. This month, they're actually all through the website, and they are as follows. The first question comes from Kelly here in East Hampton, Massachusetts. She writes, I have to do a presentation at work on Web 2.0. What does this mean to you? Well, that's a very good question. And Web 2.0 is a very broad term. And to me, what it means, Web 2.0 gets away from the old traditional static website, which was more informational, didn't really get updated that often. Web 2.0, like I said, it's a general term, but it things like user-submitted content, interactive websites, social media websites, all of those fall under that Web 2.0 umbrella where the content is really generated by the user, and there's a lot of those types of features. So in general, Web 2.0 is about that, getting away from those more static informational websites and allowing collaboration between users, allowing users to publish their own content on a website, and building off of that. So that's really my sense, or what I think of when I think of Web 2.0. So thank you very much for that question, Kelly, here in East Hampton. Second question comes from Jim in Tacoma, Washington. It's the first question we've had from Washington. This is good. And he writes, my company built a website 5 years ago, and now I'm being told it is out of date and needs redesigning. Is this possible? Jim, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but yes, it certainly is possible. And 5 years ago, it's probably likely that you are probably in need of a website redesign. Jim didn't send what his website was, so I'm not commenting specifically on his website at this point. But just in general terms, web technologies, I mean, they change so darn fast. 5 years ago, you know, browsers were, standards compliant browsers weren't really even around. So technologies have changed a lot. Everything from like browsers, like I mentioned, screen resolutions have changed a lot. 5 years ago, you would build a website optimized for an 800 by 600 pixel resolution. Today, 1024 by 768 is the norm. And the reality, there's a lot of other websites that are even wider than that, or that could be wider than that with current screens. So those are some of the factors that 5 years ago really weren't in play. Another factor is that web standards 5 years ago was in its very infancy. There were some early adopters, but browser support was very poor. And web standards, you know, with separating design and content, there wasn't a lot of that back then because of limitations of the browsers. Those limitations have largely been lifted now. Jim, the good news is that if you redesign your website this time and you do follow a standards-based approach, separating the design and the content, 5 years from now, when you may need to redesign for some other reason, the redesign won't have to be as wholesale. Odds are your website, if it's 5 years ago, it's probably very table-based, a lot of background images, background colors in those tables, very things that we don't do anymore. And in part, really because we want the website to be easy to maintain going forward to make changes. So yes, unfortunately, it is possible that you do need to redesign, but the good news, it's going to be easier for you down the road when it comes to redesigning again, because all your stuff will be controlled in one style sheet. So, Jim, that is my answer to your question. Thank you for writing. And our last question comes from Joan in Silver City, New Mexico. And she writes, what would you say is the most overlooked aspect of a website when you work with your clients? Well, fair enough question. If I had to say there's one thing that is the most overlooked aspect of a website, I would say it's content. I know it's not a glitzy answer. It's not very technical, but that I feel that is the most overlooked piece of a website when I'm working with a client. I don't know why that is, but clients tend to think that content will just magically appear. And if you remember, I did a podcast several months back about content and its importance. It's not something that really should be taken lightly, and even though I tell people from the starting gate, you know, content is going to be your driving factor. You're going to need to spend time with it. Inevitably, not on all projects, but frequently the content is either hustled together at the last minute or delivered and not quite ready for prime time. So that would be the most overlooked thing. I think people tend to look at things in terms of technical because it's online and it's on the web. They're getting caught up in, oh, technical things, but that's where you hire someone like me, because I'm going to worry about all of that, making sure it's okay. Your concern then is really just the content, what images you want, then working with me on design, stuff like that. But the content is really where your bread and butter as a client working with anyone, any web designer, should be. And if you don't have time to do it, definitely hire somebody to help you out, because if it is overlooked, it's going to make your website suffer. And clearly, that is not a good thing. So thank you very much, Joan, in Silver City, New Mexico. And thank you also to Jim in Tacoma, Washington, Kelly in East Hampton for the questions this month. And of course, if you are interested in having your question answered during an upcoming show, go to tunnel7.com/podcast and complete the Have a Question form. If I use your question on the show, you will receive, well, at the moment, nothing, but you will be mentioned, just as these folks were, and that's worth something, isn't it? I hope. All right, that concludes the Q&A. Let's go on to the feature. So for our feature today, I'm going to be talking about website accessibility. Now, the first question you may have is, okay, what is website accessibility? Well, put simply, website accessibility is the practice of making websites available to handicapped visitors. These handicapped visitors will have disabilities that range from visual, for example, people who are blind or colorblind or have poor vision, to auditory, people who are deaf or hearing impaired, to motor, people who don't have muscle control, as well as people who suffer from seizures and intellectual learning disabilities. Now, oftentimes when discussing website accessibility with someone, the initial reaction is, well, that's just such a minority group. Why should I even bother? Well, to counter that, I'll tell you that there are nearly 32 million people in the United States alone who are affected by one of these disabilities, and that accounts for over 12% of the entire population. Now, in my opinion, that's an awfully big group to not be accommodating on your website. Now, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, or WCAG as they're called, have been established by the Web Accessibility Initiative, which is part of the World Wide Web Consortium, also known as the W3C. And that's the organization that oversees the internet. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about these guidelines and to give you a little background information. Then we're going to delve into some more practical things you can do on your website to improve your website accessibility, and also some tools you can use to see if you're meeting standards, and if you're not, why you're not, and getting recommendations to fix it. So without further ado, let's talk about WCAG 1.0. WCAG 1.0 was the first effort to establish guidelines for website accessibility. WCAG 1.0 offered 14 guidelines that are broken down into priority levels, priority 1, 2, and 3, with priority 1 being items that must be addressed, priority 2 items being items that should be addressed, and priority 3 items being items that may be addressed. Sound a bit technical? Well, it is, and I'm not going to go delving too much further into that, as I want to focus more on the practical hands-on advice. However, if you'd like to learn more and you'd like to see those 14 guidelines, go to the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 1.0 website, and there's a link to it right from the show notes. Now, also related to WCAG 1.0, I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention Section 508 guidelines here. Section 508 guidelines were created by the federal government and are closely tied to the WCAG 1.0 guidelines. The United States government already enforces these guidelines on all government websites, meaning that they are already mandating website accessibility standards. For more on Section 508, you can also visit the Section 508 website, and again, there is a link in the show notes going directly to it. So that's WCAG 1.0 and Section 508. Now, I should also mention WCAG 2.0. So in 2006, WCAG 2.0 was released, and it shifted away from those concrete 14 guidelines to a more nebulous concept that websites should follow. Now, if you think WCAG 1.0 sounded technical, well, WCAG 2.0 is even more so. Again, I'm not going to go into specific details so I can focus more on practical advice, but if you'd like to learn more, go to the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0 website, and there is a link in the show notes going to it. One last point about website accessibility. While there are visual elements, like how, when you look at a website, what it looks like, that are considered when we're talking about website accessibility, most all of the guidelines actually deal with how a website is built. And that is hard to convey to people who don't regularly work with websites, particularly coding websites or programming websites, and who think of websites merely as something they look at online. I make that point because realistically, you can have two identical looking websites and one may meet website accessibility guidelines, and the other may fail badly. It's all about how a website is coded and programmed that makes the difference when we talk about website accessibility. So keep that in mind. And let's move on now to some practical advice to make your website accessible. Okay, enough about the history and the guidelines and the standards and all that. What do I need to do to make my website accessible? Well, I'm glad you asked. Here's a list of items to consider when building a website. And I should also mention at this point that website accessibility should be considered right from the beginning of any website project. It's really not something you can easily retrofit in down the road. I will say that building a website with web standards will get you very close to meeting website accessibility guidelines, as there's definite overlap between the two. In fact, the first item on this list you'll see is taken right from the web standards guidelines. So having said that, I've digressed enough, here is the list. The first thing, in terms of practical advice to make your website accessible, separate presentation, which is your HTML, design, what the website looks like, which is your CSS, and function, which is usually your JavaScript. So you separate those three things out. Does this sound familiar? Yes, this is the same approach a standards-based website uses. Your website should be built using these principles of separation. Not only is it good for accessibility, it's also good for easier management and maintenance and better search engine results. Second thing on the list, validate your HTML and use semantic markup. So disabled visitors take cues from HTML code. For example, if something is a paragraph, it should be marked with an HTML paragraph tag. If something is a headline, use an HTML headline tag. Not doing so disconnects disabled visitors from content and makes understanding your website difficult. Next thing on the list, allow for increasing text size. Make sure your website text can be increased or decreased using the browser. Visually impaired visitors rely heavily on this functionality. Do not set font sizes in pixels, because it will prevent resizing in some browsers, but rather use relative measurements such as EMs or percentages. Next, consider color contrast and don't rely on color to convey meaning. Black text on a gray background is difficult for anyone to read. Imagine how trying it will be for someone with vision difficulties. Make sure you provide sufficient color contrast between your website elements. Next, use supplemental navigation. Adding access navigation at the top of every page that jumps directly to content or navigation will be greatly appreciated by a blind user, as they will be able to easily navigate your website, as opposed to having a lot of text to read before they hit the navigation or the content. Use access keys for navigation. People with motor function issues cannot control a mouse. Adding access keys to your main navigation will give them an easy alternative, push of a button essentially, to navigate your website. Use labels, field sets, legends, and tab indexes on forms. Forms are often a pitfall for impaired visitors to your website. Take care to ensure that these visitors will have a good user experience and be able to complete your website forms by utilizing these HTML elements. With tables, use captions and summary. Both of these HTML elements provide additional data about the table's content. While these HTML elements are not visible to non-impaired visitors, they are elements that impaired visitors rely on. Add alt text and title tags on all images. Alt and title are also two HTML elements that convey additional semantic meaning, and that's key, semantic meaning, about an image used on your website. A blind person will not see the image, and only these tags will tell them what it actually is and convey any meaning. Provide alternate content to multimedia. Flash files and the like are similar to images in that a blind person cannot see them. Make sure you provide alternate content for these files so they can understand your message. Use subtitles for video. Video is becoming more popular on websites, and by right, readable subtitles should be used to accommodate hearing impaired visitors. Underline links. If somebody is colorblind, the color of your link text may look no different to them than the rest of your text. Underlines help set your links apart. So those are all very practical things that you can take into account now with your website and apply them. This list should give you a good idea of the direction a website should move towards to be accessible. Now, there are other resources available online that offer similar lists. One that I like a lot is Aaron Cannon's Web Accessibility Checklist, and I recommend you review his list as well. And there is a link directly to his checklist in the show notes on the website. Okay, so testing for website accessibility, we should talk about that. So by now, you may be asking yourself, how the heck do I know if I did all this right? And that's an excellent question. I will be the first to admit that website accessibility tends toward the technical side of web design. However, you'll be happy to know that there are several excellent tools you can use to test if your website meets website accessibility guidelines. So the first category I want to talk about are website accessibility validators. These following and free online tools will show you if your website meets website accessibility guidelines. The first one is called Cynthia Says. And again, for all of these tools, so I don't have to say it each time, there are links in the show notes to go to any of them directly from my website at tunnel7.com. Shameless plug. All right, Cynthia Says. This is the standard for testing for website accessibility. Cynthia Says has been around for years and will give you a detailed report on how well your website meets website accessibility guidelines, as well as where it fails. To use it, it's just as simple as you go to the website, you enter in your website address, and you let it test. And you get a report back saying you passed, pass, pass, fail, 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 and more detailed description is there as well to help steer you. That is a very good tool. The other one that I use is called the Web Accessibility Evaluation Tool, or WAVE for the acronym. This tool really does much of the same work that Cynthia Says, but does so in a more visual way. Now, often I use it both tools when assessing website accessibility. Okay, so those are my two primary tools I use for website accessibility validation. The others that I'm going to mention here are related. They're not going to tell you yes, you pass or no, you fail. But what it will tell you, it's very much more specific. So these tools deal with specific elements of website accessibility, but are no less useful. The first one is the W3C HTML validator. Validating your HTML code is the first step in making your website accessible. Remember we were talking about semantic HTML markup? Well, this is the validator that will tell you if you're going in the right direction. This tool will help show you any errors in your code, and then you'll be able to fix them. So the next one is called Color Oracle. I stumbled across this one actually in researching this podcast. And what it is, it's a little bit different than the other tools. All the tools we've mentioned to this point are web-based. Color Oracle, you really download it for free. And what it does is it emulates how a web page will look to a colorblind user. So for me, I pulled up tunnel7.com. I opened up the Color Oracle program, and boom, it showed me exactly what it would look like to a colorblind person. It's very eye-opening. It's a very useful tool. And a lot of times visually, people connect better when you're kind of thinking of these technical things. I find that tool very useful. The next tool is the snook.ca color contrast checker. Now, remember when I talked about making sure you provide sufficient color contrast on your website? Well, this tool will help take the guesswork out of it. You can enter in your website and it runs an algorithm and comes up with different contrast numbers, and there's ranges. Very helpful, very useful when you're considering accessibility, particularly with the color contrast. And the last one that I'll mention is the Firefox Screen Reader Emulator. Now, this tool is actually a plugin, so it's really its own little program for the Firefox browser. And what it does, it will show you how your website works for a blind person. Now, often I will tell you that this is a very eye-opening experience, and you'll be able to see pitfalls for handicapped visitors really quickly using this tool. Because what it does is it really just reads to you the code, because that's really what blind people see, that's really what blind people hear when they're using a screen reader. And so I'll repeat that to you. So you'll really get a sense of how easy or not easy your website is in terms of accessibility in that regard. All right, so let's tie everything up here. We've talked about some practical hands-on things you can do to improve your website. We talked a little bit about how the guidelines came to be. So let's tie it all together. So what are the benefits of website accessibility, and what is in the future? What's going on down the road? Well, the obvious benefit of meeting website accessibility standards is that you are accommodating all visitors to your website. However, because there's a significant overlap between website standards and website accessibility, you also get some very nice benefits that all visitors, and not just handicapped visitors, can benefit from, including higher search engine rankings and faster loading pages. Now, in the future, I do predict that website accessibility will become more important as time goes by. As I mentioned, already the government enforces website accessibility standards on their own websites, and it may only be a matter of time before some level of enforcement may appear for all websites, particularly given the ever-growing popularity of the internet. Now, even if no such law is ever passed, I argue that it is simply a good practice to accommodate all users to your website, and for that benefit alone, website accessibility should be considered with your website. And that concludes the feature on website accessibility here in episode 10 of the Tunnel 7 podcast. And that also concludes this episode of the Tunnel 7 podcast. I hope you enjoy the show and are a little more knowledgeable than you were before we started. On the next episode, I believe, and don't hold me to this, I'm going to be talking about how to decide on a website designer. As always, the Tunnel 7 podcast is sponsored by absolutely nobody, but should you feel the desire to send cash, I have no problem mentioning you here. This episode and every episode is recorded in the Tunnel 7 studio with an Audio-Technica AT2020 microphone and the Alesis Multimix 8 USB mixer using the lovely free functional Audacity software. The song Sun Is Out by The Wig Report is used for both the intro and outro music. For more about The Wig Report, go to myspace.com/TheWigReport with two G's in wig. For more about me, your Tunnel 7, or if you have a question you would like answered on the show, you can visit tunnel7.com at any time, day or night, weekday or weekend, because, after all, that is the beauty of the internet. Thank you for listening, and until next time, enjoy!